At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello friends, and welcome to your midweek edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits and Molecular. And friends, I'm afraid to say it's happened again. There are certainties in life, aren't there? Death, taxes, the sky is blue, the water is wet. Ipswich Town don't beat Norwich, and they also go out of the cup to a lower league opposition every single bloody year. I'm Mark Heath, I'm joined by Stuart Watson, I would say fresh from Bromley last night. You certainly fresh than you would normally be, Stu, because you didn't actually go to Bromley. There was no space for you, which is unbelievable, in the press box. Clearly don't know who you are. So you got to cover it from home, which is a rare and actually, ironically, a much easier, smoother experience. So how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. As you say, a little bit fresher than I would have been had I travelled back from Bromley last night. To be fair to them, they did eventually come back to me sort of the day before the game and said, we can squeeze you all in. I get it. It's a smaller ground. They've got work going on there. There was interest in the fixture. They wanted one per organisation originally. AJ put his hand up fastest, and I didn't fight him too much for that. I have been to Bromley many years ago, a cup game with Colchester United when they were a non-league outfit, Bromley. But yeah, watched it off the telly last night. Didn't make for great viewing, did it?
No. AJ sent us a little picture in the group chat of his seat in the press box, which I found incredibly triggering because he was basically knee to knee with other people, which is not what I enjoy doing at all. Your setup, however, Stu, I was most intrigued, and you didn't actually answer this. You sent us a shot of your setup at home. Have you got a Super Nintendo in that room?
I have, yeah. I've dusted off the Super Nintendo. You eagle-eyed in the back of the picture I sent to you.
Is that still working?
Took me a little while to set it up. You have to, it's kind of like analog based, and you had to kind of tune it in old school, which took me a little while to work out how to do that. But yeah, it's up and running.
It's probably worth a few quid that now, mate. I found out the other day. You know, do you remember Donkey Kong? Mm-hmm. The kind of fold over flip things. You can get serious money for those now. Dug ours out. If yours says Tokyo 1982 on the back of it, you might be able to make some money off it. That's an aside anyway, friends. Obviously, we're here to talk about the football. Ipswich Town grimly predictably lost at Bromley last night. League 2 Bromley went out on penalties. It wasn't very good. And obviously, the start of the season hasn't been very good, you'd have to say. Stu, how did you feel about it? How are you reflecting on it this morning?
A bit flat and disappointed by it at the moment. There's definitely a sense of sort of negativity brewing amongst the fan base at the moment. I think I was against the grain in terms of trying to look at the positives from the Birmingham opener and the way Ipswich weren't at their best, but were still able to get a point. I think I've given the benefit of the doubt largely for the way transfer dealings have unfolded, and I kept saying, don't panic, there's still plenty of time. But here we are, flat, you know, poor opening day performance in the league. Out of the cup last night, not much better in terms of performance. Again, a lower league club. And yeah, so much up in the air in terms of transfers. And we're in the midst of a really tough start on paper with Southampton coming up, Sheffield United on the horizon, and a relegation hangover still very much to shake off. So not in the best of spots at the moment. And you can sense that in Kieran McKenna's voice, I think, when he's speaking to the media.
100%. Shall we just briefly review the game, Stu? I've got various pictures of players I want you to do, like I'm going to use as visual aids, and then you can kind of maybe have some talking points around them. But the game itself, Stu, what did you make of the team, first of all? Because there are a few players that I was surprised to see last night, which I guess, again, speaks to maybe some of the issues around the team in general.
Yeah, we know it's wholesale changes from Kieran McKenna in the cup. We've got enough evidence of that. It pretty much is for most managers up and down the land, rightly or wrongly. I think with Kieran, it's more a case of giving a chance to other players rather than kind of not taking the competition seriously. But it was a struggle to try and work out how they were going to make 11 changes going into the game. That scenario would have required Kyusta and Akpom to be thrown in straight away. Little bit surprised that neither of those were involved in any capacity. I get that they, you know, haven't had much slash any pre-season between the two of them at Napoli and Ajax, respectively. But this, they've got to get some minutes at some point, and this game looked like a good opportunity just to ease them in at the start, even if it was with cameo appearances in the second half. But the club obviously know their status of fitness better than we do. I was shocked that Chio Bene started again on the right-hand side.
I was
really surprised when he started at Birmingham, even more surprised when he starts again, a second game in 5 days, given how long he'd been out for. Speaks volumes of how well he's recovered. And I thought he was one of Ipswich's better performers, actually. That was an encouraging one. But to see him start again says everything about the shortage of right-wing options at the moment. We knew there were going to be lots of changes, and there was.
Yeah, Leif Davis was another one I was surprised to see playing. First half, Stu, I'm not going to lie, I thought it was very dull. It's one of those ones where I was just like, oh, what's going on my phone? There's nothing going on the pitch. It's still pretty turgid. And then, of course, it all gets made worse by the fact that Bromley score as the first half closes from a corner, a set piece, which apparently they're very good at, very keen on working on. Bit of a flat from Walton, and it's in the back of the net. It's 1-0 at half time. And I mean, Town, although they had a lot of the ball, they didn't really create a lot in that first half, which is a bit discouraging. Ali Alhamadi, I guess, had one of the best chances when he ran the keeper, but then went too wide and the chance got away. What did you make of the first half, and how are you feeling at half time?
Warning signs, I think, in the second minute when Elaware headed over at a corner. A lot of talk about how Bromley are really strong at set pieces. Yeah. Landed the Giants at the back with former Ipswich Academy player Shawumni.
He is huge, isn't he?
He's a big old boy.
He makes Kipre look small, which I wasn't expecting to see.
Yeah, I think one of them 6'6", one of them 6'5", those two centre-halves. And yeah, warning sign early on when he headed over a corner. Ipswich dominate possession, but it was all a bit huff and puff in attack. Mm. It was the tempo of it never really stepped up, did it? And Connor Chaplin talked afterwards about maybe we lacked urgency at times, and it felt a bit like, oh, we'll knock it around and eventually something will happen. There was the odd moment, wasn't there? Chaplin put a couple of really good through balls away. You mentioned the Alhamadi chance where it's a bit of a heavy touch around the goalkeeper. Almost a trademark Davis cutback to Chaplin when he fired over. But bottom line is they didn't create anywhere near enough for the amount of possession that they had. And then Bromley go and score from a corner, which was shouldn't have come as any surprise. Their threat, and Ipswich didn't deal with it enough. When two first contacts in the box, as you say, Walton has a flap. You go into half time. I was going to say you go into the dressing room at half time, trying to work out how to come back into it. They didn't go into the dressing room, as it turns out.
Yeah. I was thinking we should maybe try to do that today, Stu. Record this outside next to a bus in kind of tribute to what happened. Not ideal, clearly. Some sort of plumbing issue, I think, in the away dressing room, which brings to mind John Beck's Cambridge United, maybe back in the day when he used to do kind of things like that. I'm not saying there's anything improper going on. Just interesting. So McKenna gives his team talk outside the team bus at halftime. There was a change at halftime, Stu, and that's going to bring me to my first visual aid, because this guy came on and Ben Johnson obviously came on for Leif Davis, wasn't it? And I thought he was a real bright spark. I mean, I don't know where he's playing. He seemed to pop up everywhere.
Yeah, nominally left back. He was a sort of straight swap for Leif Davis. I would imagine that was a pre-planned change. Leif Davis missed the final warm-up game at Auxerre with what I believe is a hip injury. He was a very late fitness shout to start against Birmingham, looked a little bit off colour against them, wasn't his usual sort of up and down self in that game. A little better in this match in terms of creating in the final third. I mentioned a couple of those cutbacks, but set pieces weren't quite there from Leif Davis. A couple of sloppy moments where he switched off and people got beyond him. Gave the ball away a couple of times as well. So he's clearly someone that is nowhere near at his at the peak of his powers at the moment, at the start of this season. He comes off, Ben Johnson comes on and was probably one of Ipswich's most threatening, if not the most threatening Ipswich player in the second half. Gets the goal, of course. Yeah. As you say, he's left back, but he was everywhere. And I think that is something Ipswich are looking at. And that's probably with the type of left wingers they've got at the moment, with Jack Clark, with Jaden Philogene to come back, are players in comparison to Nathan Broadhead. They like to stay wider. They like to be sort of traditional wingers. And what happens is then that Davis and Clark / Philogene almost end up sort of tripping over each other a little bit and getting in each other's way. So it's something they worked on in pre-season, and it's something they tried again last night with the inverted fullback with Leif Davis sort of rolling into midfield. And Ben Johnson did a bit of that last night as well.
He did. He kept popping up in the edge of the box, didn't he? At times he looked like he was playing the 10 almost. But he was very lively and I enjoyed his contribution. The other guy I'm going to bring up, Stu, because the second half was certainly better. Obviously, Town got the equaliser. And I thought this guy was important as well to a lot of the good stuff that Town did last night. Ross has got a picture, by the way, friends, of this guy, Connor Chaplin. Every single game this season, he's got a picture of him giving the thumbs up, which I'm hoping is a theme that can be continued throughout the season. But Connor Chaplin, against you, started to drop a bit deeper, getting on the ball, making things happen. Obviously, he had a big part to play in the goal with some beautiful skill, and he deserved the goal from that, if I'm honest. But obviously, Ben Johnson gets a rebound and scores it. What did you make of Chaplin? Because we've spoken about him before, you saying that it just feels like the team functions better when he's playing.
Yeah, and I think we saw evidence of that last night. He plays the 10 role very differently to Sammy Schmodix, who is sort of a second striker who wants to get up on the last shoulder more. Connor drops into... He's a very, very intelligent player. We know Connor Chaplin is obsessed with football. He watches tons of football. I think he's in Kieran McKenna's ear, wanting to talk the game to real depths at all times. And you can see that in the way he plays. Picks up clever little pockets of space. He was buzzing about in the final third. They were two gorgeous ground passes from deep that put Ali away a couple of times. As you say, lovely bit of skill to sort of take the ball on the run in the box. Got that shot away that got tipped onto the bar ahead of Johnson scoring the rebound. I do think an Ipswich attack sort of functions a bit better with him in it. He sort of knits it all together. He was certainly one of Ipswich's better players last night, I would say.
100%. So 1-1, and you would hope then that they would go on and win the game, Stu, given the quality on the... clearly not, you know, a first-choice 11, but still more than enough quality on the pitch to beat a League Two side. Bromley, I have to say, were very impressive in terms of their ability to counter-attack. What did you make of the rest of the game until we got to the penners? Because there were opportunities for both sides to win it, weren't there?
Yeah, I mean, Kieran McKenna spoke post-match about how his side... had enough chances to win the game in the second half. And if one of those had gone in, the narrative would be completely different and how we'd be talking about, well, they showed spirit to come back. They got another late goal, which is a hallmark of a successful side. Winning games when you're not at your best is the hallmark of a good side. I'm not sure that would have been the conversation we'd be having this morning. Yes, we'd have touched upon those elements, but I still think the overriding feeling would have been of a Town team that's not fully functioning at the moment. Mm. And yes, Ipswich had chances in that second half after the goal. Just looking at it, Johnson with a couple, didn't he? He had some rising shots that were tipped over or just went over. There was a big block on George Hurst in the box. Sammy Schmodix, when he came on, had a sweeping effort saved after some really good work by Ian and Chaplin. Yeah. And the massive one was obviously in stoppage time, wasn't it? Ali Alhamady with an absolute sitter at the far post after a cross from that man again, Ben Johnson. But that does kind of overlook the fact that Bromley had their chances as well, second half. They were a major threat on the counter-attack. I've got three big chances for them on the counter on my notes here. Walton made a big save from Dinanga just before the hour. Finn Barbrook had to make a big block inside the box. Ashley Young had to make a big block inside the box. They had some dangerous set pieces as well. So it wasn't all one-way traffic in that second half. Bromley were kind of competitive and in this match from start to finish, I thought.
Absolutely. And you just mentioned it there. This young man is definitely worthy of highlighting. Finn Barbrook making his senior debut last night. And that moment in the second half, I think it was from a town corner, wasn't it? When suddenly Bromley were on the counter-attack and he was literally the last man, buried himself into the ground to make the block. We talk about them not being a lot of bright spots last night, Stu. Ben Johnson, Connor Chapman, we talked about. That's what Finn Barbrook was certainly a bright spot for town last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Rooting for him, actually, because I sat down with him and his twin brother, marginally younger twin brother, Harry, in 2023 when Ipswich went deep into the FA Youth Cup and the two of them starred in that. Harry's moved on now, but Finley now finds himself very much in the first team fold, largely because of the shortage of midfield numbers. He is really the next man in line behind Azor Matasiwa as the sort of holding midfielder on the right side of those two central midfielders. Azor missed out with a tight groin, which is a slight concern last night. But Finley Barbrook, I thought that was a very, very solid competitive Ipswich Town debut for him last night. Screened the back four really well, made some good interceptions, looked after the ball really well. I think he was top in terms of passing accuracy. He can hold his head high this morning, Finley Barbrook. And you mentioned that block at the end. As someone who loves the art of defending, when you get a sort of a two-on-one, when you get an overload, that awareness of space, because if you go charging to the man with the ball, you make his mind up. He can just slip it left to his teammate. If you don't close down quick enough, then you're in problems as well. So he did really well to sort of give the attacker a decision to make. He kind of marked the half space, knew when to close it down. That was a fabulous block. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. He's from Southwold, isn't he, Barbrook?
Southwold, the family, big family of Ipswich Town fans, going back through sort of parents, grandparents. Proper Blues, Suffolk boys, the two lads. And Finley's got a chance at the moment because, as I say, midfield is very thin on the ground.
Well, he was certainly a bright spot. Can't be many professional footballers come from Southwold either, Stu, just as an aside. You'd think more rugby players come from Southwold. Anyway, penalty shootout, Stu. You'd predicted this, but you predicted that Town would win the penalty shootout. This was not good for our deadlines, I must say, by the way. But obviously, they don't. They end up losing. What did you make of it? First time I think I've ever seen fans behind the goal using their phone lights to try and distract the players, which, you know how bright that light is. I'd imagine that could be quite effective if they get a bunch of them together and try that. So George Hurst missed a penalty, and then obviously Ali Alhamidi. I feel very sorry for Ali, I must say. Misses a decisive spot kick. He looked absolutely pooped, I would say, late in the game. And then when he steps up to take that sixth penalty, if you'd have given me money, I'd have put it on him missing, unfortunately. And he duly did, Stu. Should we have a bit of a chat around Ali? Because, as I say, I feel sorry for him because he was such a fan favourite, wasn't he, when he first arrived? And it's just been going away from him in recent times at Town.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary. We have to pick our words very carefully, I think, today when we're talking about Ali. It is possible to have real empathy and sympathy for him in this moment, but also concurrently at the same time talk about there being no room for sentiment in football and him, I think, probably not being at the standard Ipswich require at this juncture as a team that's expected to be gunning for championship promotion. It's amazing how quickly narratives can change in football. He arrives midway through the championship promotion season. Fans love his energy and the passion in which he plays and the way he kind of interacts with the crowd. And he and he played his part off the bench, didn't he, in that promotion. I think people do overlook the fact that he was playing with through the pain and playing with a groin injury at that time, underwent surgery. And yes, he looked miles off it in the Premier League when he came on for a few cameos, but he hadn't had much of a pre-season. And this is a guy who started the calendar year in League Two and was now being asked to perform semi-fit in the Premier League. That was unfair. And then football's about moments, isn't it? It's what sticks in people's mind. And unfortunately, that poor penalty miss against Bristol Rovers in January, you know, led to the loan spell away. I actually was starting to think that he could turn it all around this summer. Three goals in pre-season, smile on his face, was really lively off the bench against Birmingham last Friday night. But last night was a major step backwards, not just for the penalty miss, but for that miss in stoppage time, not being able to make the most of a couple of sort of chances to run in behind in the first half, as I said. So it's starting to feel now like it might be difficult to kind of turn things around for Ali at this given moment in time, I would say.
What does that mean then, Sue? Do you think another loan out for him? And then I guess if they do that, they then have to go and get another striker to replace him, don't they?
I think so, yeah. I would imagine it would be a loan, and that's maybe open to a sale. I don't know. Again, this comes down to wages and probably what other clubs are not going to be able to or willing to match what he's on. So more likely another loan spell, I would say. And then I do think Ipswich should have to go out and get another striker. Yes, they've brought in Chuba Akpom to compete with George Hurst. He may be required in other roles elsewhere. Kieran McKenna's talked about him being able to play in all four positions up top. So, I think you need three strikers to be a, you know, title contender, which is what we hope Ipswich want to be. So, Ali to leave and another striker to come in, potentially a young loan. That would be my feeling as we sit here now.
Okay. You do have to feel for him, though. He's 23? Yeah. Connor Chaplin said after the game, he's absolutely gutted, feels like he's let everyone down. I think it was his first start, actually, wasn't it, since that Bristol Rovers game. So, you know, confidence must be on the floor. As you say, he looked like he was up for it pre-season. He was scoring goals.
I've had very limited dealings with Ali, a few sort of press conference interviews here and there, but he's a big character. He's a classic Liverpudlian, and he's an emotive guy. He's a big personality, as Connor pointed out last night. Because of the way he handles himself and the way he carries himself, you forget how young he is. And there was a bit of a cryptic social media post from him over the summer, a very long post that hinted at sort of mental health and various things like that. So we do have to be very careful when we're talking about these guys, because they're human beings. And I'm sure he's not feeling great about himself this morning. But I'm intrigued to see sort of what happens next for Ali. But that felt like a moment that might be difficult to sort of come back from in the short term at Ipswich Town last night.
Okay. A couple more players I just want to talk about, Stu, before we maybe reflect on the result as a whole and what that means. This guy you've already mentioned, who I was surprised to see, I think we were both surprised to see last night, Chiyawo Gbene. I thought he looked decent. I thought it was quite encouraging. I mean, there were a couple of times in the second half, particularly, like he was really starting to stretch them, obviously involved in the goal. You have to remember this, he played, what was it, five games in the Premier League, then snapped his Achilles. So he's still fairly early on in his journey back to what he's going to be. But I thought that was encouraging last night. I'm surprised to see so much negativity around him, if I'm honest.
Oh, I wasn't aware that people had were being a bit low on Chio. I thought he was, you know, given the circumstances, as you say, 9 months out, a handful of cameos in pre-season. I think he's got himself in remarkable shape. And you listen to Kieran and the Ipswich players talk about him, what a positive, uplifting character he is behind the scenes, how dedicated he's been to his recovery. And his style of play, direct, pacing down the right side, is what Ipswich have missed. It's been integral to the rise through the divisions. Caden Jackson did really well there, sort of in League One, and then off the bench in the Championship. Wes Burns was obviously the sort of the main man in that regard. And I think Ipswich missed a player like him last season. So in pre-season against Birmingham, I thought he looked sort of like he was playing a little bit within himself, which is understandable. But last night, he was taking people on. He was stretching it. And that picture that you just flashed up sort of sums it up, as he's got a couple of sort of defenders left in his wake, sort of on the deck. So I thought that was an encouraging step forward for Chio, actually.
I do. A couple more. What's your take on this man we've seen a couple of times already? It's Ashley Young, if you're not watching. Obviously, massive experience, huge experience. And we've seen him a couple of times already in games. What have you made of him so far, Stu? Because I like the look of him.
Yeah, he's classy, isn't he? I think I said to you from my very first viewing of him in pre-season that you can, I think it was the Charlton game at Colchester, that you can just, you can't put your finger on it, but you can just tell he's got elite qualities. Said something that sounded a bit silly at the time in terms of that they just strike the ball different. It sounds different. It's and I thought we saw that again at Birmingham when he came on in a red hot atmosphere as a former Villa player. And again last night he had 100 and I can't remember exactly 100 plus touches of the ball, which is a really high number. It wasn't perfect. There was a couple of loose moments, but by and large, everything he did was really assured. I thought he was. That's an interesting shout. I would say he's probably in line to start at right back against Southampton on Sunday. Actually, I know Ben Johnson came on and did well at left back, but he struggled in the opener at right back. And I would think that Ashley Young is about to make that right back slot his own. How many games he can rattle out at 40 years of age? We'll have to see. But he looked good, didn't he?
He looks incredibly fit as well, doesn't he? Like fit as a butcher's dog, not an ounce of fat on him.
He's the same age as me, Mark. I don't look like that.
Yeah, but you're a unit, mate. He's like a whippet. You're more of a tank. And I mean that in a good way, Stu. Mm. But you can outlift him. And then one final guy I want to mention, Stu. This kind of falls into the slightly worried about camp. But this guy, Jack Clark, he's gone back to his Alice band and his floppy hair. We're all very enthusiastic about what he might be able to do this season, but been fairly underwhelmed with him so far.
Yeah, it was one of the ones who disappointed against Birmingham, and that continued last night. Just tried to do too much on his own at times. He was every time he got the ball, he wanted to beat three men, and most of the time he ended up sort of getting crowded out or running into traffic. He sort of darts in off the left-hand side and ends up just sort of being shepherded all the way along the edge of the box. And it's not happened for him at the start of this season. And you start to sort of question whether as good a player as he is, and he is, and there was some really nice stuff in pre-season, and he got that nice goal against Charlton. We know his qualities, lit up the Championship for Sunderland before, and by no means am I writing him off for this season and the months ahead. But you do question whether he kind of fits stylistically with Ipswich at the moment. I've just talked about him and Davis maybe not wanting to occupy similar spaces, and then all of a sudden you're having to kind of repurpose Davis, which feels like a bit of a waste of his qualities. Jaden Philogene hasn't exactly set the world alight since he arrived in January. Certainly not lived up to his price tag so far. He's obviously got a bit of a knock at the moment. And then you're thinking, actually, they had a pretty good player in that position already, and Nathan Broadhead, who did fit the system. And now it looks like they're on the verge of losing him because he called in sick yesterday morning. I wonder if he put his little poorly voice on when he rang up Kieran McKenna. It's a real shame how it's come to this, eh?
Yeah, we're going to talk about transfer stuff next. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about on that front, and that kind of adds into the kind of slightly, what's negative, maybe a slight feeling of discontent around things at the moment. But are there any other players you want to highlight, Stu? Obviously, the result as a whole, I think it's, what is it, 15 times in 15 years they've gone out of cups to lower league opposition, something like that. I mean, it's become a bit of a running joke now. And on the face of it, you know, going out of the cup is not the end of the world, but it just, it's one of these things, you are what you repeatedly do, isn't it? And it's just, when we talk about them needing a fast start to the season, I mean, Conor Chaplin, when he was asked about this last night, he said, yeah, that was the plan. It was to come here and win, you know, get that winning feeling back. And it's not happened.
No. I started covering the club in 2011, which is the start of this run of of cup defeats. Of those 15 matches, I have attended 13 of them. The only two I wasn't at in person was Barrow in the FA Cup.
That was a lucky escape, yeah.
Because we knew Kieran McKenna was going to get appointed the next day, and I didn't really want to be travelling back from Barrow when that all kicked off. So that was a bit of a tactical decision not to be there. Watched that one on ITV4 or whatever it was broadcast on that night. And I didn't go last night for reasons already explained as well. But it's a pretty woeful record, isn't it, really? Look, Ipswich aren't the only team that make a ton of changes. It's important to point out, actually, that when we talk about the banana skin, and the worry going into this is that Bromley are upwardly mobile and they've got spirit and camaraderie and chemistry and all of that. They made, was it seven changes last night that they made themselves? They dropped their League Two Golden Boot winner, was on the bench. It was far from them being at full strength. I looked through it. It was quite a young team. It was not many EFL appearances between them, so there is that context as well to bear in mind last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other players too you think worthy of highlighting? I mean, I suppose the other one, which I probably would have split screened with Finlay Barbrook, was Cameron Humphreys, who I think has looked pretty lively in the first two games of the season. He may have a bigger role to play, perhaps, as we look towards the weekend.
Yeah, he was good in midfield alongside Barbrook as well. I mean, we kind of, again, maybe we're getting a little bit blasé about what Cameron Humphreys can do at such a young age. But between the two of them, two Ipswich Academy graduates, Luke Wolfenden obviously as well through the academy in that team, I thought the two of them did well there in midfield. That doesn't mean that we can't be a little bit concerned about the shortage of numbers in midfield. Those two lads are good players. But it's not where Ipswich want to be as a team with lofty ambitions this season. Azor Matasiwa may take a little bit of time to adapt to English football. Certainly, evidence from Birmingham suggests that might be the case. Jens Kajusta, how long is it going to take for him to get fit? Will he stay fit over the course of the season? It feels like a hell of a lot rests on those two situations at the moment, I have to say.
On Jens's knees. And we'll come on to that when we start talking about Southampton. Clearly, the main talking point from last night's Stu, aside from the grimly predictable defeat, was Omari Hutchinson. And Kieran came out after the game and in his usual kind of balanced way spoke about the situation quite eloquently. But it's certainly something that is a concern when it builds into the whole narrative around the club. So essentially, I'll read the quotes. It's important, I think, that you kind of hear them as they were. So asked after the game about Omari, Kieran said he trained on Monday okay and then felt he couldn't contribute today with the situation as it is. That was his decision. He made his desire to continue to play Premier League football if the opportunity is there. I think it's known how much care and empathy we have for him. He's a young player, 21 years old. It's not an easy situation to handle. There's different ways to handle the situation, and that seems to be more prevalent in modern football, players getting advice in different directions. He's a very, very young player, so we have empathy for him. We'll try and guide him in the right way in terms of how to deal with situations, but so long as he's at the football club, we want him able to contribute and help the team on the pitch. In terms of the actual kind of state of play, he says there's not been anything that's changed the club's position yet. It's known that Omari had a buyout clause and his contract was active for a few months. There was no serious or appropriate offers in that time. Once that position is closed, it's the club's position to make the decision as they see fit. There hasn't been any interest or offer to change that position so far, so we'll see what the next few weeks bring. And then it was put to Kieran that, well, he's an Ipswich Town player. Surely it's up to you what happens with him. If you don't want him to go, he doesn't go. And then Kieran says, situations are never as simple as that. Of course, the club has their position. The player has his position. It's never as straightforward, especially when dealing with a young player here. We'll see what the next few weeks bring. So this is starting to become a bit of a mess, Stu, the Amari situation. Clearly, as Kieran says there, you have to have empathy. He's 21 years old. He's a kid. And you can't blame him, I guess, in a way, if he has an opportunity to play Premier League football and earn loads of money. Obviously, that's if I was 21, that's probably what I'd want to do. But there are ways of handling the situation, and choosing not to play is something that clearly creates an issue. I mean, if I rang up and said to you today, Stu, I don't obviously working today, you know, you'd rightly be pretty annoyed with me. And also, I guess we have to add Nathan Broadhead into this, as you say, called in sick yesterday morning and clearly wants to leave. So these are worrying situations in terms of the players themselves, and B, the feeling around the club, and you know, the mood in the dressing room, that kind of thing.
Yeah, how to address this one? I guess things are a little bit different in football, because when we're trying to compare it to our normal workplaces, if I turned up at work, I'm not going to suddenly sprain my wrist and then not be able to make a mega money move to a rival. So these guys, I guess that when he's talking about advice, Kieran, I would imagine that's coming from agents, plural. There seems to be a lot of people, representatives around these players, certainly at the top end of the game now, and they're probably saying, well, if you go and play, do you want to go to Bromley, get smashed by one of their giant centre-halves and then get injured and everything's off the table? It's not worth the risk. Our advice is for you to not play. Ipswich's point of view is we're paying you good money. You're on a long-term contract. You need to... we need you to contribute in while we're light on numbers at a difficult part of the season. So I can kind of see it from all parties' point of view. Kieran, I think, is very much the man sort of stuck in the middle. You've got Mark Ashton and the ownership sort of putting their foot down and saying we're not going to be walked all over here. You've got Amari thinking, I'm a really ambitious player. I've had a taste of the Premier League. I've got a chance to go back there. I don't think they've been non... When Kieran talks about there hasn't been a serious offer on the table, I would argue there has been serious offers, because we know that bids have reached £35 million, which was the buyout, which was the relegation release clause. It was just the terms of the deal. I think it was them wanting Brentford, in the first instance, wanting to spread it out over a long, long period of time. So I don't think they're a million miles away. It's going to be about payment terms, maybe extracting a few extra million on top of that 35. The question is it for Ipswich to kind of prove their point of getting the best possible deal for us and we're not going to be walked over? Is that worth it compared to all the angst of now sort of any ill feeling surrounding Amari? And more importantly, not having a lot of time to reinvest it before the transfer window shuts.
Yeah, and the broader thing, obviously, as well, just, again, an eyebrow-raising quote from Kieran, which was, Nathan reported sick this morning, which obviously isn't ideal on the day of the game, which, you know, maybe things he's not saying there, but you think, again, that kind of ties into that can't be good in the dressing room, can it, when you've got players who basically, like, oh, I don't want to play.
Yeah, there comes a point, and you hear it, you've heard it over the years with managers saying it's all very well having these players contracted for a long time, but if a player's heart and mind is lost, there's no point being too stubborn about it, because you want players there that are fully committed. From Nathan's point of view, I've got more sympathy, actually, because he did make himself available to play at Birmingham. Yeah. He came on. And I thought he gave absolutely everything in that game. That was a fired-up cameo. But it's Wrexham. It's a club that he's got emotional ties to. He's a North Wales boy. He was at Wrexham as a lad. He's in the final year of his contract at Ipswich. And he's probably feeling a little bit hard done by to have seen both Jack Clark and Jaden Philogene recruited in his position. So maybe, you know, isn't necessarily feeling the love of Ipswich at the moment. So... a little bit more understandable from his point of view, but ultimately, as a fan, if you're someone who pays your hard-earned cash to travel up and down the country and buy tickets and shirts and all of that, and you're hearing these very well-played players essentially refusing to play, it's not good for anybody, is it, really? And certainly in terms of Operation Rebuild the Mood at the start of this season, it's a pretty unwanted situation. And you wonder if it could have been handled slightly differently and whether these situations could have been nipped in the bud a little sooner.
Yeah, the thing I will say about Amari, I've seen some appalling language used in his general direction on social media. He is a kid. I'd say just remember that. He's 21 years old. I don't think some of the things I've seen can be justified in any scenario. Anyway, Stu, we have had some transfer news this morning in that big Aro Muric has gone out on loan to Sassuolo, which is fun to say, in Italy. Expected, Stu. Your thoughts on this very briefly before we reflect on the mood in general.
Yeah, Sassuolo, Serie B champions last year, promoted to Serie A. Loan deal, don't know the exact terms of that in terms of percentage of wages covered and whether there is a obligation / option to buy at the end of it. It's been reported that there is an option to buy for 10 million euros, which would seem pretty high, I would have to say. Clearly the writing's been on the wall for Arrow since Ipswich signed Alex Palmer on January transfer deadline day, got themselves in a bit of a muddle with the goalkeeper unit. Undoubtedly has been a major transfer flop, and the hope now has to be that he can go there, be a bit of a success, and Ipswich can recoup at least a bit of their money on him, I would say.
Absolutely. Right then, Stu, mood as a whole, we're two games into the season. We hoped for a fast start. It hasn't really been that. They were pretty dreadful, I would say, at Birmingham. Very lucky to come away with a point. And obviously last night wasn't great either. With the asterisk, of course, it's only two games into the season. But it just feels like there's quite a bit of negativity around. And even in, I'm not saying Kieran McKenna's negative. Clearly he's not. He's a very positive individual. But there's some exasperation in his voice when he talks about the scenarios that are going on. How are you feeling two games in?
This is, I think, the growing frustrations and worry in some quarters is based on the fact that from the Chelsea win onwards at the end of 2024, it's been a really difficult year for Ipswich Town. They've lost a lot of games, certainly not won many. And it felt like a good start was required to kind of draw a line under that. And it's not been a good start. Okay, they rescued a point on Friday. Last night was what it was. It's important not to sort of overread into that. I think it's more, not so much the performances and the results, it's more everything that we've just discussed around the transfer window and the uncertainty and a feeling that there isn't, albeit there's some very good players on paper, there isn't necessarily a sense that there is a team in place. What got Ipswich up last time was spirit, togetherness, chemistry, momentum, feel-good factor, major bond with the crowd, all of those things that are unquantifiable, intangible in many ways. And now it feels like it's all about sort of big transfer fees on paper and player trading, and maybe some of that little magic stardust has faded a little at the moment. And I think that's what people are feeling. So that's not to say it can't come back, but this is a little bit of a stormy waters at the moment. The end of the transfer window can't come soon enough. I'm sure Kieran feels exactly the same, to get all of these situations drawn a line under, and then he can really get his teeth into kind of getting this team rocking and rolling again, hopefully.
Yeah. Do you feel like, in terms of transfer stuff and moving players in and out, they've sort of tied themselves up in knots, gone to a bit of a flap in some scenarios? It doesn't feel smooth. There's not as like everything Ashton touched turned to gold, didn't it? And now it feels a lot more messy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and we've how many times have we talked about we have to put complete faith in Ashton, the owners, McKenna, when it comes to transfers, because everything felt so planned out in the past. And he's talked about, you know, it's looked at well into, you know, we're not just looking at the next window, we're looking at the next 2, 3, 4 windows, and we're always thinking about pathways and not blocking pathways. And there are transfer targets A, B, and C, and there are some multiple positions now where, as I say, they've got themselves in a bit of a muddle. The goalkeeper situation is clearly one. I've touched upon that left wing situation where it was they wanted Philogene last summer. He was number one target. Couldn't get him because he goes because of the Villa sort of clause that they activated. They then go and get Jack Clark. Then Philogene becomes available in January. So they get him just because they can. That feels a little bit kind of off the cuff, some of those situations, rather than sort of clearly thought out. It's an unbalanced squad at the moment, and we're in the middle of a difficult start. And it, I know it's a marathon, not a sprint, but a decent start did feel important for Ipswich this season to setting the tone, and they've not given themselves anywhere near the best chance in terms of transfer dealings and the whole way this summer's unfolded.
But, Sue, the beauty of sport, the beauty of football especially, is games come thick and fast. There's always one around the corner, and there's a big one this weekend for Town in terms of kick-starting their season. Football, 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 biggest game since the last game. Southampton at home, home opener, promotion favourite rival. All that narrative around Southampton from last season and previous seasons. Mm-hmm. This is a huge opportunity for Town to really stamp down a marker and really kick their season off in fine style in front of their home fans.
Yeah, we have this whole sort of slightly downbeat chat for today. Yeah. And then you go and beat Southampton in your home opener. And it all changes. And because it will be a completely different football match to the first two that Ipswich have played so far. A real battle at Birmingham. Bromley counter-attacking, real threat at set pieces, everything the game was last night there. You would think Southampton is going to be more of a football match, and that generally suits Kieran McKenna's sides better, doesn't it? And then we'll just get to see a glimpse of who's in better nick. Southampton and Leicester, as you know, it's easy to forget, as two fellow newly relegated sides, have also had issues with losing star players, a lot of uncertainty surrounding players that are still there. Neither of them, I think, have done the incoming business that they would like. So Ipswich are not alone in having sort of difficulties of kind of sorting themselves out after Premier League relegation. Is this a good or a bad fixture for Ipswich to go in? You could probably make an argument both ways, couldn't you? But it does feel sort of significant, which sounds ridiculous at an early stage of the season.
Like 2 games in, this is massive. But you know, that's the nature of football, isn't it? That's why we love it. I'd like to see it as an opportunity, Stu. And I'm sure Kieran McKenna will say exactly that when you speak to him on Friday, because it is. You know, you've got a team coming in expected to be one of your big promotion rivals. You're at home, kicking off the season at home. There is a lot of narrative around games with Southampton. You win this game, and as you say, a lot of the issues melt away, and we're feeling pretty good about things. Southampton, I watched them against Wrexham in the first game of the season. I don't think they looked great. They were quite lucky to come back and get the win there, which obviously does, I guess, build some momentum for them. Will Steele, I've been very impressed with when I've heard him speak, very much in the McKenna sensible, balanced, intelligent manager mould. But I guess the big question around this year is what sort of team might we see on the pitch? Because obviously we've talked about their issues with Amari and injury issues as well elsewhere, as all Matasiwa, tight groin, Leif Davis maybe carrying a knock. Jens Kajusta not had any pre-season at all, and Kieran saying he's not really, really ready to play. Same with Akpom. So who do you reckon might play on Sunday?
Yeah, I think Ashley Young might get the nod at right back. I think he might replace Ben Johnson from the opening day. We know that Palmer, O'Shea, Greaves trio at the back is nailed on. Leif Davis, haven't really got many options other than sort of keep going with him at the moment. I do feel watching him, he's not 100% fit at the moment, but needs must with Connor Townsend out for the long term. I wouldn't want to be sort of reshuffling things around too much and putting Greaves out there. The big issue in the Premier League season was just no relationships, no partnerships were built all over the pitch. And I just want to see Ipswich stick with some partnerships now. And centre-half is one of the most important partnerships on the pitch. So I wouldn't go messing around with that too much. But say we don't know where Leif Davis is at fitness-wise. Midfield, it all depends on how Azor Matasiwa is and what this tight groin situation is like. Hopefully that was just precautionary last night. I can't see Jens Kajusta starting the match the way Kieran McKenna talks about him. It feels like, you know, he talks about Akpom and Kajusta having limited pre-seasons. Neither of them have played any friendly games, but it sounds like Kajusta hasn't really even trained with the Napoli group either. So I think he's going to take a few weeks to get Jens Kajusta up to pitch. I would manage people's expectations in terms of when they're going to see Jens out there and how much he plays. So probably Matasiwa and Taylor again.
Do you think there's an argument with replacing Taylor with Cam Humphreys?
Yeah, possibly. I think Cameron, you just hear the way that McKenna and the players talk about Cameron Humphreys and how mature he is for his age. And he's someone that hasn't got sort of the relegation scars, having had a really good season with Wickham at the top end of League One last season. They're different types of players in some ways. Taylor is someone who wants to get forward and shoot from range. Humphreys is someone I think can really help out Leif Davis in terms of dropping into those left-back pockets. So is he more suited to this sort of game against Southampton? Possibly. There's definitely an argument there. It will be Hurst up front. We know that. Can Ogbeni go again for a third game?
What are the other 8 days? I guess you could put Ben Johnson out there. He played there in the Premier League, didn't he?
True.
I don't know what else they can really do. Unless you put Jack Clark out there. They're kind of limited there, aren't they?
They are, yes. And then it's, you know, has Connor Chaplin done enough last night to not just in terms of the way he plays, but in terms of the way he leads and the way he knits things together? Has played Southampton in several of these games in recent years. Put Szmodic on the left, and as he played last season, move Clark over to the other side, which they looked at a little bit in pre-season. I don't think Akpom will go straight in from the start, but I get a feeling that he'll be on the bench. Maybe Ogbeni to start, and then with Akpom to come on around the hour or something like that. I don't know, but I still think it will be the bulk of the Birmingham team that starts again on Sunday.
What would you like to see in that three behind the striker, Stu, if you had your...
On Sunday?
Yeah.
I'd like to see Szmodic as the inside left. I think he tucks in a little bit more and I think he offers a goal threat.
Mm-hmm.
Chaplin as the 10.
Yeah.
And then right wing is where you're struggling a little bit, to be honest. Given I've got concerns about an Ogbeni, you know, just playing too much too soon. Maybe try Jack Clark there. Don't know. It's a difficult one, that.
Yeah, certainly an issue with the ongoing Amari situation. I know we're literally, a few hours away from them losing at Bromley, Stu, but I'm going to ask you for a prediction for Southampton, which I appreciate is foolish. But hey, it's what we're here for. It's what people want to hear. They really need a win, Stu.
Yes.
Do you think they can get it on Sunday in front of the Sky cameras, home opener, massive game, but clearly some negativity around them? How do you feel?
I didn't watch Southampton's game against Wrexham last weekend, but obviously it was two stoppage time goals, the first of which was a fabulous free kick. But from what people say, they weren't any great shakes in that game against Wrexham last weekend. Ipswich haven't won a home league game this calendar year. The last time they won at home in the league was that Chelsea match. I'm fascinated to see what the atmosphere is going to be like on Sunday. Yeah. I think Sunday lunchtime games always take an edge off the atmosphere. It's never quite the same, is it, when everyone's feeling a little bit sleepy on a Sunday lunchtime. But I would imagine the atmosphere will be massive. Well, I know the atmosphere will be big leading up to kickoff. Ipswich need to start better than they have in their last two games. They've had better second halves, but they've just not set the tone well in the Birmingham and Bromley games. And they need to set the tone in this one to keep the crowd on side. I'm not saying the crowd will turn, but I could feel it getting a little bit edgy, and that maybe translating to the pitch. I'm just hoping for a really good football match. Two teams going toe to toe. Prediction.
You don't have to make a prediction. I appreciate that. We can always put our predictions out later in the week.
Score draw 2-2, something like that at the moment. And then we're all left wondering whether is that good?
Exactly.
I think that's what we'll be left
talking.
How
it happens
would
be the big feeling on that front. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see. It certainly does feel, and it is nonsense to say, it certainly does feel big already this early into the season. Just going back to what you said about Kuster and Akpom, McKenna said last night, basically Kuster has had no pre-season. So he, by the sound of it, isn't ready to play. And Akpom has had, I think he referred to it as a partial or limited pre-season. So he might be slightly closer, but certainly you would say very long shots that either of them start on Sunday. I'd be surprised even if we see Kuster maybe off the bench, if I'm honest. But we will see. Anything else to mention, Sue, before I remind people of our brilliant sponsors?
No, I don't think so. We've got some Flynn Down narrative, as usual, coming up against Southampton, which have obviously had some interest in him over recent transfer windows. Bit of a new look Southampton attack in some ways, with Brereton Diaz and Armstrong both back from loans. So, there's still plenty of Southampton players that are left from some of those battles last season and even the Championship season before as well. So that become a little bit of a mini rivalry in recent years with late goals and drama and stuff like that, hasn't it? So, I'm looking forward to it. I think that's how everyone feels at the moment.
Well, you're looking forward to the slight feeling of trepidation at the same time and dread. Yeah. Okay, friends. Right. Well, we now have two sponsors, as the boys brought to you on Monday. Stardust Spirits re-upped. I brought you fake news that we're ending the term with them because, unbeknownst to me, they'd already signed up for another term. So they're still on board, and we're very pleased to have them. Gary and the team there, all their excellent concoctions. Use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk for 20% off. And I would highly recommend, as I've said before, the cask aged rum and the single malt. Absolutely tremendous. Very, very drinkable. And AJ is very, very high on the Biscoff gin, which is award-winning, multi-award-winning around the world. So get your hands on some of that as well. And also, coming on board for this season, Suffolk-based business again, based in Leyston, Molecular UK, manufacture cleaning products for the automotive, agricultural and commercial industries. They're a family-run business that have been in operation for over 40 years, manufacturing products to the highest standards. They work closely with the customers to ensure they're not only receiving the best products, but a service they can rely on. And if you use the code KOA10, on their website at the coupon section, you get 10% off. That website is www.molecular-uk.com. www.molecular-uk.com. And hopefully by the end of the season, Ross will be able to pronounce the name of our sponsor, which I very much enjoyed him avoiding on Monday's show. So just a reminder there, KOA10 is the code you need there at the coupon section. They've got some excellent stuff. I'm looking to get my hands on some of that because I'm starting to become slightly more car proud as I get older. Stuart, I don't know about you. You like to have a nice spick and span interior and exterior of the car. Is that possible with a young child?
it gets left longer than it needs to be, but then I'll realise it's time. It's been left too long, and then I'll give it a proper good.
And then when you do it, clean. You're like, why don't I do it more often? It looks really good. It feels really good. I feel better.
Parents will know when you remove a car seat and you see all manner of crumbs and growth that sort of started underneath one of those, and you go, oh, this is not good. But normally it's got a bit of litter and footballs and various sort of paraphernalia strewn about, but then I'll get stuck into it. So yeah, I might get my hands on one of these molecular kits. They sound good.
Yeah, they look really good. My car is, again, different to yours. I'm a dog owner, so most of the time my car looks like someone has shaved an animal in the back seat of my car, which isn't great. But I'm starting to try and keep things more spick and span. Other things, friends, to mention before we leave, just a reminder that we currently have our best offer of the year, £6 for 6 months or 50% off a whole year. So £29 will take you through the whole year. That offer expires a week today. So if you want to jump on board and take advantage of it, that time is running out, and that offer will not be repeated again this year. So £6 for 6 months or £29 for a whole year. Hopefully you feel that's a fair value for what we provide for you. And also, just a reminder, we've got a new magazine coming out, A Blue Era, which looks back at the remarkable, and it is a remarkable story, the rebirth of Ipswich Town under the American ownership, under Mark Ashton, Kieran McKenna, the Demolition Man summer, all that kind of stuff, running towards adversity, Jason Schechterly. It's all in there, gathered together for the first time in one place, the way we've covered that rebirth. And I've been putting that together, and it is remarkable when you look back as to where we were and what's happened since, and the success the club has had, and also the real strong kind of narratives around that success. Very, very interesting. So if you order that now, you can get £2 off. You can also get your name in the back of the book as well. It will look great next to Mission Impossible on your Ipswich Town bookshelf. Stu, anything else to mention before we take our leave?
No other business.
I want to recommend something I've seen on TV, which is called Critical, which is on Netflix. And it's some of the most incredible TV I've ever seen. It's basically following the emergency services in London around various accidents and attacks and misfortunes that befalls people. It's genuinely staggering, Stu. There is a scene on there which I've never seen anything like it. It was both fascinating and slightly stomach-churning, in that a guy has been attacked with a metal bar, completely fractured his eye socket into loads of little bits, and it shows a surgery to repair it, which involves essentially just cutting the scalp here, rolling his face down, peeling his face off, and then fixing the eye socket, just rolling his face back on, and tipping it up. It is, honestly, it's tremendous. The skill.
No one's eating their lunch while listening to this.
No, it's life, Stu. It's absolutely fascinating. These people are incredibly skilled and deserve every cent, every penny they earn, and probably a lot more. If you don't mind me saying. Right then, friends, Ipswich Town, bit of a concern. Two games in, not been great, has it? But there's a big chance to turn things around this weekend with a game against Southampton at Portman Road. The boys will be there, so follow it with them if you can't be there. Press is on Friday, again, so follow that with us, and then we'll be back next week, hopefully, to talk in more positive terms about Ipswich Town really starting their season and getting a big win against promotion rivals and on the way to a big season ahead. Have a great weekend, friends. We'll speak to you next time.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.